Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and welcome to the 120th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire Internet Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein, and I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, leagues, players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites, and don't forget the Major League Soccer Talk podcast. That's hosted by Robert Hay, Earl Reed, and myself. And don't forget to listen to this program on mtrradio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, chat room is open. Come on in. Discuss whatever you like amongst yourselves. If you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to pass along some condolences to a certain person this past Sunday night, early Monday morning, or was this actually this past Saturday night, early Sunday morning, a gentleman by the name of Michael Jones. He's originally from Liverpool, England, but he lived in New York City, Westchester County in upstate New York, which is not really far from not really far away from New York City at all, depending on what part of Westchester you are. You can get down there, obviously, with commuter rail, Metro North. The gentleman, unfortunately, lost his life leaving an establishment in Union Square, near Union Square. Apparently, updated stuff has come through. It might have been a result of mistaken identity, even though it's not the case here. Unfortunately, Mr. Michael Jones died of a stabbing, and of course, his throat slashed, I believe his left ear cut off. Was not a robbery. Money was not the object. Apparently, this man who apparently thought, I don't know, we haven't really read the whole report yet here, this updated report, but it's really sad. It's on 14th Street, between the east and west side. Union Square is mostly in between the east and the west side of Manhattan. And it's just really a sad thing to know. This man was a part of the New York Red Bulls Youth Academy. He was a head coach at a soccer, youth soccer group up in Westchester County. I believe West Harrison, it's called, the town. It's just a sad thing, apparently, that people assume that he did something wrong, didn't do anything wrong, apparently wrong place at the wrong time. This was at 4:15 early Sunday morning in New York City after meeting with his girlfriend and meeting with some friends, and he was ready to leave, and all of a sudden this happened to him. It's such a tragic thing when you lose a life like this for no reason whatsoever. And apparently it sounds like it's mistaken identity, and sadly he paid for it. The New York police, the NYPD, they're looking at videotape. Commissioner Ray Kelly of the NYPD says the murder of a youth soccer coach near Union Square early Sunday morning may have been the result of mistaken identity. Apparently, on a quote, there's some information that there was a fight in a bar. Kelly said, at this time, we don't believe that the victim was involved in the fight with the perpetrator at the bar. Once again, if anyone is friends or related with Mr. Michael Jones, if you're listening to this program, I send my condolences to you. And if there's anyone listening on the archive from Liverpool, England, about what happened with Mr. Michael Jones, my condolences to his family up in Liverpool, England. It's such a terrible tragedy, and pray to God this never happens again to anyone. It doesn't matter who you are, what you are, where you are. I pray to God this will never, ever happen again. And once again, family and friends of Michael, Young. I send my condolences to you. I also send condolences to the New York Red Bulls organization. Such a tragic thing. Did I ever know this man? I've never known this man at all. I've never I've seen him once, twice, maybe three times within the halls of Red Bull Arena, said hello, and probably that's it. I did not know the man. I did not talk to the man that much. But sadly enough, he is gone, and it's just inexcusable, and it's a shame that a good man like this, that his life has been extinguished. And once again, my thoughts and my prayers and my condolences to his friends, to his family, and to the New York Red Bull organization for what has happened to Mr. Michael Jones. Very, very sad day, not just for the New York Red Bulls, but also for American soccer, especially the kids that he coached in the West Harrison area of New York State, Westchester County. Very, very sad day once again. We're going to move forward here, obviously, before we get to our guests here. I have to say, once again, it just never fails when we have to discuss something like this that has been really, really tough to understand. Apparently, through the last couple of days, this past Thursday and Friday, it sounded like there was going to be some progress through the district in our nation's capital, that maybe DC United was finally on the right track when it comes to DC United finally getting a stadium. And it sounded like things were going to be positive, and it sounded fantastic. And apparently a certain council member of the district was finally turning things around. Finally, maybe DC United was going to get something punched through here. But unfortunately, it just sounds like it's not the case. Brian Strauss from the Sporting News came to Red Bull Arena this past Saturday to see the Red Bulls take on the Chicago Fire. And I went up to him. I said, hey, congratulations, good news and stuff and everything. It sounds like it's going to happen. He said, no, it's not going to happen. Because apparently the certain council member, and I forgot his name, but he's in the D.C. council. He was asked by another reporter that, oh, you're finally going to agree with what you said because it's being tweeted all over the place. He says, no, that's not real. And that's what apparently found out from Brian Strauss. He said, that's not real. That's not going to happen. That's no, you know, that's just him being, I guess you might say that's a certain council member that doesn't believe that soccer is going to work in the nation's capital, even though the last time someone from the District of Columbia won a professional sports title before DC United ever came around was the Washington Redskins in a Super Bowl. But DC United, once again, getting shafted by a council member from the District of Columbia. And once again, does it have to be said that, you know, one of the original members of this league just can't seem to get any respect from where they're playing? I know and I understand that they have brand new ownership with DC United. And I understand that this type of help surely could have been, you know, been a part of these discussions. But when you find out that one side of or one party in these discussions to try and bring in a real soccer stadium to the District of Columbia, to Washington, D.C., and our nation's capital, keeps on getting shafted because of a certain council member that probably has more power on the council than anyone else. Let me just tell you something right now. This is what disappoints me about people like that guy. It's amazing that he just cannot see it in front of his face. He just cannot see it that RFK Stadium is ready to crumble. And even though my good friend Eric Ruinez has informed me that there are articles out there about DC United building a stadium that they found some spots. What's going to happen? The original tweets were that DC United was going to pay for the stadium as for the construction, and the tweets were on the DC council side, they were going to pay for the infrastructure while DC United pays for the whole stadium. And then you find out whatever good came out of it is really gone to the wayside. It's just really heartbreaking and really disgusting when you just don't understand why it's this hard to build a stadium and why the league continues to harp on building a stadium in Queens, New York, in Flushing Meadows Park, when it's not ready to be built yet. This type of help must come to DC United, and if it doesn't come to DC United, then what's going to happen? I don't know how much longer they can play to RFK. I don't even know how much longer RFK can be deemed safe. What happens if the upper deck falls onto the field? What happens if the upper deck falls into the lower bowl? Who is going to be sued by this? Probably DC United, the company that manages RFK, Major League Soccer, U.S. Soccer. And here is the Professional League of American the Professional League of Division I soccer in our country. And the acting and arrogance of not helping one of their chartered clubs. I don't care if the new owners of DC United or the new part owners of DC United, which are the Philadelphia 76ers, have said, we don't need your help on this. It's fine. I understand that. You know, that's their choice. I can understand their choice and I can respect their choice. But you understand where I'm coming from and the real voice of giving a damn about the game in our country. Why are we worrying about a second New York City team when there should be help for both the Revolution and DC United to help with the local governments pushing forward to getting a stadium deal done? If they don't want to do it, if they don't want the league's help, these two clubs, I understand and I respect that. But I cannot respect what Major League Soccer is doing. And what Commissioner Don Garber is doing. I think he's done a great thing for the league. I think he's done fantastic things. I will never, ever go against Don Garber on anything good that he has done to help make Major League Soccer grow into what it should be, a real soccer league and whatever. But when you're talking about building a second team for New York City, and you're still not fixing what's wrong in Red Bull Arena, at the same time, you have two clubs that are still playing in stadiums that are not suited for them. Where is that financial help for DC United and for the New England Revolution, whether they want it or not? Where is that financial help? It's nowhere to be found, and that's a shame, and it is terrible. And once again, before you make a move like this, shouldn't you just help finish off with the problems of our clubs at the moment? Shouldn't you just find a way to fix those problems? And until you do, this Queens Stadium should not be built. And I will keep on saying it. Regardless of what I think, it's going to get done anyway. Regardless of what I think, I can protest till the cows come home. I know that I'm only one voice. But that belief that I have, I believe it should not be built, and I will stand by that belief. Fix the problems that are in front of you, Commissioner Garber. Not adding a second team in New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a great show for you tonight. I have Michael Lewis on from Big Apple Soccer. As you all know, it's World Cup qualifying time this coming Friday. We got, of course, the USA taking on Antigua and Barbuda this Friday down in the Caribbean, while, of course, Canada is going to take on Cuba at BMO Field in Toronto. We're going to have on Michael Lewis from Big Apple Soccer and, of course, TrophyGold.com NESL segment. We're going to review the semifinal first leg playoff. And, of course, the Red Bull Hour, we're going to discuss the two-goal loss to the Chicago Fire, as well as brand-new general manager, Monsieur Jérôme Depotin. But joining me very soon, and we're going to talk about Canada first, because they've got themselves a tricky situation, ladies and gentlemen, a very tricky situation. And you know what? They have an opportunity in these next two games. These next two games on their calendar, Canada once again hosting Cuba, and of course their final game in the semifinal group against Honduras. Very interesting when we talk about CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. Very interesting. You never know what you're going to get depending on who the opponents are going to be. But I'm here to tell you it's going to be exciting. It's going to be fun, and I cannot wait to see it. Hopefully, I will be able to see it through either ESPN, through their ESPN3.com, or I'll be over this coming Friday at the Football Factory once again at Legends in New York City, as once again, the USA road game will be on the beIN Sports channel. Of course, I do not have that channel at home. I will be heading over to the Football Factory at Legends in New York City, as they do have it. If you have Dish TV or Dish Network or DirecTV, you will be able to watch that game. But if you don't have it, it's not on Comcast in English. It's on other things going on as we're waiting for Dwayne Rollins from the 24th Minute blog to come on over. Of course, remember the Canadian Soccer News Media with Ben Lycroft and Ben Knight, Daniel Squizzato, as they cover the game very well. Canada, very, very interesting stuff. Very, very wonderful things here as we take a look at Group C as we wait for Dwayne Rollins to call in and to tell us what's going on. But once again, Panama is in first place with 9 points. Canada, at the moment, in second place tie with Honduras, and the only thing right now that is stopping Canada at the moment is the goals differential. As we take a look once again, seeing about what Canada is going to have to do here to try and do well. Obviously, it's a 3-point win for Cuba, for Canada, if you think about it, against Cuba. But they got to score a lot of goals. And then, of course, Honduras has to play Panama. And we'll see what's going to happen with that one. And Honduras will be in Panama for this match. Of course, if you don't have beIN Sport, FIFA.com, of course, check on all the games that are going on in UEFA, South America, Asia, Africa, Oceania, and CONCACAF. I'm telling you, Canada, it's going to be a very interesting thing to see what's going to happen when it comes to qualifying for the final round, the hexagonal, because obviously it's going to be interesting what's going to happen, especially with the injury to Dwayne De Rosario. We don't know what's going to happen, because Dwayne De Rosario is done for basically the rest of this year. And the only way he'll ever try to do anything with CONCACAF qualifying is if anyone and everyone steps up. Because if no one's going to step up for Canada and stepping up for Dwayne De Rosario, then basically Canada's not going to go anywhere. And it's really, really a tough thing to see for Canada that has been developing into a strong soccer national team through the years. Obviously, there's always been questions about certain players. There's been questions about certain head coaches of the national team. But one thing is for sure is that, you know, Canada, will, in my mind, they should be one of the top three nations in this confederation to make it to the World Cup and to have a solid run towards basically towards qualifying for the World Cup. It's just one of those things where you just don't know what's going on and how it's organized. But one thing is for sure is that I always like to believe if you're in the North Zone, if you're in the North Zone, you have to be one of those top teams. You have to be one of those top teams along with the U.S. and along with Mexico to be out there and to play well. Still waiting on Dwayne Rollins to give us a call here, or trying to give him a call. Once again, this is the Four Seasons Fire Internet Soccer Show. The United States will be traveling down to Antigua and Barbuda in the Caribbean to take them on, while Canada will be at home to take on Cuba. And don't forget, next Tuesday, Canada travels to Honduras to finish off their semifinal round, as the U.S. will host Guatemala next Tuesday at Livestrong Sporting Park. It should be interesting once again. And, of course, who is going to step up for Canada? Who will be those players to step up and replace a man like Dwayne De Rosario, who makes his country go on the football pitch? Is it Julian de Guzman? Is it his brother? Is it certain players like Ricketts? Who is going to step up and put Canada into that next round to get to the hexagonal? I believe the last time Canada was in the hexagonal was in the qualifying for the 1998 World Cup against France. Who will step up for the Maple Leafs, for Les Rouges, and put them into the final round of qualifying? That's the big question for Canada right now. Will it be the people that the Canadians expect to go through? Or will it be an unsung hero? Will it be someone coming off the bench? Who is going to be that person? Who is going to be that person to step up and be that guy to help out not just their teammates, but for their country to get to the hexagonal? Who will be that person? And maybe we got our man on the phone right now. Dwayne Rollins, you there? Dwayne, are you there, sir? Dwayne, are you there? Hello? Guess we're going to have to probably try again. having some difficulties with the phone line here. Hopefully try and get Dwayne back up here if we can. Trying to get Dwayne Rollins on, trying to get him on the line here, talking about Canada, because we want to give Canada, I mean, this is big for them right now. This is basically their time to shine when you got to face a team like Cuba that is really not that strong against, you know, not that strong against a team like Canada, basically. I mean, let's be honest, Canada should be better than Cuba. You can say it's 3 points. You can definitely say it's 3 points for Canada, but the problem is how many goals you're going to score, because that differential is so big. That differential is just so big. You don't know what's going to happen when you're going to have to go and face a team like Cuba that not too many people know about. But the point is, it's just one of those things that you need to know when you're facing a side like Cuba that you're going to have to put away. You are going to have to find a way to take that team and to put them away as quickly and as early as possible. Because I'm telling you right now, Canada, this is a big moment for them. They haven't been in the final round in the hexagonal probably since the 1998 World Cup during that qualifying. And I forget when was the last time that Canada actually went to a World Cup. I know it's probably sometime later in the year.
I was supposed to the Radiohead. I forgot about it.
Dwayne?
Yes. Sorry, Daniel.
Well, Dwayne, let me ask you the question. Obviously, the segment's almost finished. But anyway, how desperate is Canada right now? Because, you know, you've got Cuba in front of you Friday night, and obviously it's not just 3 points. It's how many goals you can put past them. But it's going to be that big Honduras game on next Tuesday that's really going to cement Canada to take over one of those top two spots in the group.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I think most people are looking at it that way, that if Canada can get a win in Honduras, and make no mistake, that's no easy task for any team in CONCACAF, especially a team like Canada that hasn't had a lot of success in the last few cycles. But that aside, if you are able to get the result, then clearly you're probably going to go through, and you have to look at it that way. You know, in terms of the Cuba game, they really just have to take care of business. If they get the win in the Cuba game, they will be alive going into Honduras. And, you know, it's going to be an ask. It's not an impossible ask, but it is going to be an ask, and they kind of have to look at that. I don't think that if you start thinking about if they score three and Honduras loses by two, and what does that mean, goal differential, you get bogged down in that. You really just have to look at the two games, and if you get 4 points out of those two games, then there's a good chance you go through. If you get 6 points out of those two games, then you well go through, and that's kind of the attitude Canada needs to take.
Absolutely. Of course. Who's going to step up for Canada? Because Dwayne De Rosario is done for the rest of this year with that MCL injury, I think it is, or is a lower leg injury. Who has to step up for Canada to get into the final round of qualifying?
Well, I think you look no further than Simeon Jackson. You know, he's the striker on that squad that is playing at the highest level right now. And if you're going to be playing at the highest level and come in, you're going to have to score there. They need someone. Ian Hume's a player that they brought back into the lineup with the hope that he might add a spark. He has gotten a few big goals for Canada over the years. Scored the goal that narrowed the lead to 2-1 in the infamous 2007 Gold Cup, where Atiba Hutchinson scored a goal against the United States that should have counted, but did not. But, you know, Ian Hume is another player that might be able to get a goal there. But I think Simeon Jackson is the player that you most want to look at. He's playing a striker that has played at a high level, that has scored some really big goals in his career. Twice has scored the goal in a playoff in England to send the team up to the higher level, including the goal that sent Norwich to the Premiership. So you really want to have a guy like that come through for Canada for the first time, really. He has struggled at the international level up till now.
Absolutely. Dwayne, listen, I'm going to do you a favor. Can I call you back at 8:45? Because I want to bring you back and talk a little more about what Canada needs to do to get into the next round. So I'm going to call you back at 8:45. Is that okay?
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
So we'll call you. Dwayne Rollins will return at 8:45 to talk more about Canada, having some phone issues with him in the first segment. But joining me now, of course, one of the great writers for our sport, of course, is Mr. Michael Lewis for BigAppleSoccer.com, TroppyGold.com. And, Michael, I guess I can say it now, New York Newsday.
For some World Cup qualifying games and the Olympics, and hopefully for some more local soccer who we'll see in the future.
Absolutely. Michael, of course, just like Canada, the U.S. also has some big games, and you can never take anyone lightly in CONCACAF. The United States has to go down to Antigua and Barbuda this Friday and then come back home against Guatemala at Livestrong Sporting Park in Kansas City. My question is this. Antigua has shown a lot of resiliency in their two home games. They held Jamaica scoreless, even though they didn't score a goal, but they got a crucial point against one of their top Caribbean sides. And against Guatemala at home, they only allowed a goal. What does Jurgen Klinsmann have to do to break that net and score more than just a goal? I mean, I can see 3 points, but scoring more than just a goal is not going to help them out, in my opinion.
Well, they're going to have to go out and try and play an attacking football/soccer game. I know the field at Vivian Richards Stadium traditionally has not been the greatest. I heard it might be slightly improved for Friday's game, but you're going to have to go out and play attacking soccer. And I think as anyone who's listening to this broadcast knows that people are scratching their heads about some of Jurgen Klinsmann's selections for the team this week on whether or not he had put all the optimum strikers or attackers on this team, which I guess will be topic number A, B, C, and D.
Yeah, absolutely, Michael. I'm scratching my head. I mean, obviously Landon Donovan is hurt again, and amazingly he made the roster. I don't know why. He's injured. He shouldn't even been considered to be on the roster in the first place. Now Breck Shea is not on the roster after getting a call up due to some form of injury. Josie Altidore has been told to stay in the Netherlands. Even Chris Wondolowski's not on this roster. But Eddie Johnson is making a comeback, and that's not so bad, but why?
Well, he has played well for Seattle. The big head scratcher, I think, is picking Alan Gordon of the San Jose Earthquakes, who's had a marvelous career for someone who's had a journeyman career, over Chris Wondolowski, who has had one of the greatest seasons in MLS history. And I know Klinsmann talked about, certain players I need to do certain things in the box, and Wando is not up to that task, perhaps, but sometimes you go with the hot hand. Goal scorers, and especially someone like Jurgen Klinsmann, who is a former world-class striker for a great West German and German team, I think he should have gone with his playing instincts and bring in the hot hand, because right now the U.S. is going to line up without two of their hottest players in club soccer, the other, of course, being Josie Altidore, who obviously is in the coach's doghouse, the national team coach's doghouse. It's funny because Hercules Gomez, who isn't playing for Santos Laguna very much these days, does get called in. And yes, he probably can do a lot of things for the U.S. team in the penalty area in close quarters in the 18-yard box. But sometimes you just go with the hot hand. I just go back to the 1982 World Cup. I don't know how many listeners were around then, but they could check out the history books or check online. Paolo Rossi, 6 goals in 3 games and boosted Italy to the title. I'm not saying Wando's going to do that. Quite frankly, I'd have him coming off the bench, if anything, but he deserved to be called up just as a reward for his play this season. Sorry for the long answer.
That's fine. I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I think Wondolowski deserves an opportunity with the national team. That's very true. But in seasons past, I guess, we've seen certain players not handling their international call-ups well enough to do anything for the national team. I mean, I guess we can talk about Jason Kreis, because how many times he was a tear in MLS action, yet he gets called up into the national team, and for some strange reason, he can't find the back of the net.
Oh, you're true. It doesn't happen just in the United States, but in every other country in the world. Some players are just perfect for domestic soccer. Others aren't. Except this time, it's not like Wondolowski is just scoring 10, 15, 20 goals. He's got 25, and he's 2 away from the league record. And I think sometimes you just bring him in. We're talking a 23-man roster. I'm not saying start him, but there's a certain reward factor there. And even though maybe some players might say, gee, what do I have to do to get on the national team? This is a new coach, and that's just me. I guess maybe I'm old-fashioned. A domestic player who's playing well, I don't think Wando has been on the national team enough to be considered by any means a failure. But, again, he should be on the roster.
Absolutely. Talking about when you're facing a team like Antigua and Barbuda, isn't it amazing how probably a little more than half of the roster is actually from the USL side, the Antigua Barracuda club? I mean, I find it interesting, kind of like what Puerto Rico had to do with, because you have the Islanders that are half the squad of the Puerto Rican national team is coming from the Puerto Rico Islanders of the NASL.
I think it was a great move by the Antigua Football Federation to put a team in USL Pro. Granted, they got beat up this year. They finished at the bottom of the league. They didn't make the playoffs, but the experience these players received, they would have not gotten in any local league in the Caribbean. And I think you could see it on the field. It boosted Antigua. They've never been this far in World Cup qualifying. And I hope for their sake, and I don't know how much money was spent to keep this enterprise going for the last 2 years, but I hope for their sake that they continue it in future years, because two things will come out of this. One, players will get better playing at a better competition, and the better players will be seen by European coaches or scouts, and they'll want to bring them into their teams. Maybe not the premiership, but maybe the lower divisions in England. There are a lot of Caribbean players who are playing regularly in England, and it's all about the experience. And it certainly doesn't hurt to make a little extra money, too.
Yeah, that's very true, absolutely. Rate Jurgen Klinsmann right now in 4 games. Do you think he's done a very good job? Has it been an okay job, or do you think he needs to do better?
Somewhere in between okay and needs to do better. It's not just the score. It's the way the U.S. played. I think that first game against Antigua, I don't know. I know Antigua came out and had a great game plan, and they kept it close. But 3-1 at home, and again, it wasn't just the fact that it was that close. I just expected more from the U.S. I just hope he knows what he's doing with these call-ups, not non-call-ups, because this is the danger zone time right now. Yes, the U.S. should be able to get a 3 points in Antigua, which would set them up needing just a tie against Guatemala. But I just want to caution everyone, the U.S. in 1985, in the final second round or semifinal game of the World Cup qualifying against Costa Rica, the U.S. only needed a tie. They lost 1-0 at home, and they didn't even make it to the final round. Now, this U.S. team is a lot better than that American side way back in 1985. But as we all know, soccer can be a crazy game. The ball doesn't go in, and crazy things could happen. So I don't think anyone should take anything for granted. Because I know Guatemala has a couple of players who have made life miserable for the U.S. at times through the years, in Ruiz, who used to once played for Dallas and L.A. in MLS, and, of course, Marco Papa, most recently for the Chicago Fire. And I don't think Guatemala is necessarily in Costa Rica's class, but you can't take that team for granted when it comes down to the nitty-gritty next Tuesday.
Absolutely, and especially against the side. I don't think Guatemala has ever been playing in a U.S. stadium that's going to be this loud, this boisterous, and this, shall we say, scary maybe for Guatemalan side, because if they went anywhere else, they probably would be like, we know it's going to be tough here. They're assuming it's probably middle America and in the Midwest, and you've got a place like Sporting Kansas City's home stadium where it's 18,000 plus, standing room only, on top of you, loud, noisy, and absolutely feels like you're probably in some great stadium in either Europe or South America.
Maybe. I'll tell you this. I've been in very scary Central American stadiums. Intimidating is the word, actually, is probably the best way to describe it, in Honduras and in Costa Rica, that I don't know if a U.S. stadium could become that intimidating. I'm talking obviously about the Saprissa Stadium, where the crowd is literally on top of the play. And I think that was probably one of the it wasn't a good decision to move some maybe key World Cup qualifying games out of there, because Costa Rica definitely had an extra goal playing in that place. And I'll tell you this, the U.S. was intimidated beforehand because their locker room, the visiting locker room at that stadium, was underneath a supporter section, and the supporters knew it, and they just kicked and pounded the pavement, letting the U.S. know that they were going to be in for a long game.
Absolutely.
So maybe it'll be different in KC this time. Maybe they will be loud and boisterous. It remains to be seen, but recapturing the atmosphere of Costa Rica and Honduras will be difficult.
Yes, definitely. I definitely agree with you. But, of course, at the same time, it's not just a result against Antigua in the Caribbean. It's that other match that's going to be played either at the same time or in an earlier time or a later time. And, of course, that's between Guatemala and Jamaica, and that will be in Guatemala. What does Jamaica – I mean, the points are clear. Guatemala, the United States, and Jamaica are 7 points to the good, but the differential, Guatemala and USA have one goal better than Jamaica. What does Jamaica have to do maybe to get themselves back into the top two?
That's going to be a toughie match, no doubt about it. For Jamaica, I think a tie will be considered good there. I think what they're going to have to hope for is they get a tie there. The U.S. beats Antigua, and then the U.S. ties Guatemala, and then on the 16th, and then on that same night, Jamaica beats Antigua at home. And I don't think they necessarily have to win. I'm not saying they're not going to try to win, but a tie will do them well. A tie actually will go, I think, a lot further in the long run. In the short run, it might not look good, but if they can't beat Antigua in their place, then they shouldn't be going to the next round.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with you. Michael, thank you very much for your time. Good luck to you with tropigol.com, BigAppleSoccer.com, of course. BigAppleSoccer.com is everything New York Red Bulls, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut soccer. Tropigol is all CONCACAF. Thanks again, Michael, and I will talk to you soon.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
That's no problem at all. And once again, that's Michael Lewis. does a great job covering everything with U.S. soccer and MLS, and, you know, a very nice guy. I'm very grateful to call him a colleague over at Red Bull Arena, very, very wonderful person, and I enjoy talking with him and doing everything. Once again, we're going to try and bring back here Dwayne Rollins from the 24th Minute Blog, cutting into the NASL segment, but that's okay. Want to bring him back because we had some phone issues. Dwayne, you're back? You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Great. Just to go back about Canada here, once again, I think we've talked about some of the players that you think are going to have to step up because of the absence of Dwayne De Rosario. Who else, like maybe in the keeper position, who has to probably be a little bit better on defense, especially the keeper position? Who do you expect to be in the starting 11 this coming Friday against Cuba?
I think it'd be Lars Hirschfeld, who has started for most of the games in this qualifying campaign. You know, until Panama scored two goals in the last game, Canada had not allowed a goal in the entire semifinal round. I think the real strength they've played is Kevin McKenna and Andre Hignol at the back, being able to step up and play a very consistent and solid backing back there. You know, it goes without saying that, especially in the Honduras game, they're going to have to be solid at the back. And in many ways, a 0-0 might be the most realistic expectation for what you can get out of that, something down there, maybe a 1-1 0-0 low-scoring kind of contest that they nick one or nick the draw. They have to be solid. They have to have that center-back pairing that has been so strong for them in qualifying so far, just, you know, finish it off for two games. This is, you know, realistically, when you're talking with Canada's chances and speaking to someone who's watched this program, you know, pretty closely since the 98 cycle, you know, this is exactly the pair of games that trips them up every time. A lot of people up here are pretty scared about the Cuba game. Everything suggests that they should be able to beat them, but traditionally Canada's emotional makeup, their psychology, just does not come through for them, and they ended up choking, you know, coughing up a fur ball in games like that. So, really, there's a lot of stress about that, and if, you know, I was going to point to one factor. I think they just need to get their psychology down, because on paper, I think that they are the second best team in this group. On the right day, are Panama's match. They did get a big win against Panama at home. They have the talent to do it, but psychologically, they just haven't come through in the last three, four cycles, and it's really time to change that if they're ever going to really step a card, turn around a corner and get it done. And that's, I think, really the one main area that has to be, that should be watched and has to be addressed.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there. Obviously, besides Canada's match against Cuba, obviously Panama and Honduras are going to go after it. Panama is leading the group with 9 in Group C. Honduras is in second because of the differential, but they have the same amount of points as Canada does with 7. What would be the ideal result for Canada if you're going to defeat Cuba and probably score a lot of goals? That's how I see it. That's what it, in my opinion, should be. But what's the desired result if Canada does defeat Cuba in that Panama-Honduras match on Friday?
You want Honduras to lose. I think you want Panama to pull away and win the group. I think that's the most realistic expectation, too. Panama right now, if you look at the stand, the first tiebreaker is goal differential overall in the group, which is a little different than what CONCACAF does it in the Champions League, where it's only goal differential in the head-to-heads when it's a two-way tie. So you really have to take advantage of that goal differential. And right now, Panama's a +4, Honduras is a +2, Canada's even. So, you know, they could overtake Panama, but Panama, that would be relying upon Panama likely getting a draw or a loss against Cuba. That doesn't seem very likely. So you would hope that Panama takes care of business, gets the points down there, and hopefully gets it with a couple goal win themselves, because I think what you want from an ideal Canadian perspective, and I've spoken to other people with this before, and I've referred to it as the ideal, somewhat realistic scenario, an ideal situation that might actually happen, and that would be a 2-goal loss by Honduras combined with a 3-goal win by Canada. That number of 5 differential switch would allow would give Canada three-goal differential advantage heading into the final game in Honduras, which would allow them to then lose by one down there and still advance. And that would probably be your ideal scenario.
Oh, wow. That would be really – that'd be dreamland, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and it's not completely out to lunch. I mean, I think that the Canada getting three goals against Cuba isn't impossible, and certainly a 2-0 loss down there for Honduras. Honduras has not impressed me. I think they're on the tail end of a positive cycle in terms of them going to the World Cup in South Africa. They just weren't impressive in that game in BMO Field. That's really, if Canada doesn't get through this, people are going to be kicking themselves, not so much what happens in the next two games, but the fact that they just could not score in that first set of games back last spring, because they really were all over the Hondurans in Toronto and just couldn't get the result. And the 0-0 draw there hurt quite a bit. I mean, Kevin McKenna scored one just past the post in the dying minutes of that game. Had that been 2 feet over, we're talking about a very different-looking group right now. But what could have, should have. So we just have to look forward. And I do believe that is possible. But, you know, again, not to belabor it, but the entire focus right now, and it's cliche, but really is about getting that result against Cuba and hopefully getting a few goals behind there to push that differential up. So that perhaps there is the possibility of a close loss in Honduras, still allowing Canada to advance.
Absolutely. Dwayne, thanks a lot for letting me call you back. Thanks for coming back, even though we had some phone issues. Good luck with Canada on Friday. Good luck with Canada again next Tuesday. And I'm rooting for Canada again to the hexagonal. It was since the 98 qualifiers. It was the last time I think Canada went into that.
It was.
So I'm rooting hard for you and Ben and Daniel and everyone else up in Canada. Hopefully you can get it into the final round for 2013.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It is nice on another completely aside to have at least one more positive game at BMO Field this year. It's been a little bleak on the club side of things, so a little something to look forward to.
By the way, how's your paper bag wardrobe?
we'll see. All right, Daniel, thanks.
Take care, my friend. That's Dwayne Rollins, 4th Minute. Thanks a lot. That's Dwayne Rollins, 24th Minute blog, Canadian Soccer News Group. I had to bring him back. I wanted to bring him back. We had some phone problems earlier and just wanted to get the Canadian point of view for the World Cup qualifying these last two games in this round. And, of course, hopefully they'll move on to the hexagonal North American Soccer League segment during the playoffs. And, you know, you just got to say, it never gets boring in the NASL when you've got a team like the Carolina Railhawks and they're facing a tough Tampa Bay Rowdy side. And for some reason, Tampa Bay looking a lot better than Carolina, and Carolina defeating Fort Lauderdale in that one-game quarterfinal wild card weekend. Sure, you can defeat the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, but can you take on the other end of the state? And that is West Florida, Central West Florida in the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Well, the Rowdies went to Wake Med Soccer Park. The Railhawks were rested. And you just got to say, Carolina did not know what hit them. Tampa Bay taking out Carolina in the first leg of the semifinal round. And it was Mike Ambersley in the 64th minute, late in the second half. Mike Ambersley in the 64th minute, making it 1-0 Tampa Bay. And then coming out of nowhere, Brian Shriver in the 77th minute, making it 1-1. But here comes Daniel Antonuk from Evans Fernpong in the 85th minute, 2-1 Tampa Bay. They take the first leg on total goals, obviously. The second leg will be down back in Central West Florida over at Al Lang Stadium Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. October 13th. Minnesota Stars, San Antonio Scorpions, the defending Soccer Bowl champions, taking on the up-and-coming red-hot side in the San Antonio Scorpions, and that ended in a 0-0 draw. Is that advantage for San Antonio to upset the Minnesota Stars at Heroes Stadium on Sunday night, October 14th, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central. Get your tickets now for the second leg playoffs in Tampa, St. Petersburg, in San Antonio, Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, the NASL looking strong once again. Fantastic playoffs. San Antonio, of course, winning the regular season, finishing in the top of the NASL table. Tampa Bay in second, finishing second, of course. Puerto Rico eliminated. Carolina in fourth. Fort Lauderdale in fifth. Minnesota in sixth. This, to me, ladies and gentlemen, has been another sensational playoff run. It's a shame, though. Well, actually, it's not really a shame, because who knows? Maybe we'll get it right. Maybe there will be a San Antonio-Tampa Bay final. Maybe we will see the Rowdies taking on the Scorpions for the second attempt at a soccer bowl trophy for a first-time team. Or could it be the Minnesota Stars upsetting San Antonio and having that opportunity to repeat as soccer bowl champions? You just cannot wait, cannot believe what's going to happen. We'll get some great second leg action, and hopefully after these qualifiers, we're not going to do any regular show, obviously. This will be all World Cup qualifying shows, and let's not forget, you can watch every and any NASL match on NASL.com. Go to their Ustream section, their video section, live video through Ustream, and you can watch all their games through your computer, laptop, handheld devices. Once again, NASL.com. Click on the live video tab. Watch these games live on your computer, laptop, and any web-enabled devices. You just have to say that it just gets better and better and better as the season goes on. And at the same time, next year, once again, and I will say it because it is true, the real return of the New York Cosmos in the North American Soccer League, the real return of that historical franchise that will be in Long Island. Because why? Because it's a good start for them if they want to make the move later on in their second coming, if they want to make the move to Major League Soccer. But right now, it's good where they are. I think they're in a fabulous position. And hopefully, we'll have Carter Krishnire on next Thursday to discuss, or next Friday. I keep forgetting the date. I set that date up. Hopefully, Carter Krishnire, head communications officer, we can get an NASL Soccer Bowl final show, a preview show for the final, as we take a look here. That will be on Thursday the 18th. Hopefully, if not, we'll try and get him on the 19th, but we're going to want to get it before a day or two before the finals happen. Obviously, it's a two-leg final once again in the North American Soccer League, as it's just been absolutely fantastic how these games have been going on. Yes, October the 20th is the first leg of the championship series. October 27th is the second leg of the championship series. I cannot wait for this to happen, and it's going to be awesome. I love it very much. The North American Soccer League segment, once again, get ready for second leg action on Saturday, October 13th. Once again, Tampa Bay hosting the Carolina Railhawks at Al Lang Stadium. Sunday, October 14th, the San Antonio Scorpions hosting the Minnesota Stars at Heroes Stadium. It's going to be great. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the New York Red Bulls Hour, as we are about to discuss that 2-0 loss to the Chicago Fire. But before we do, we have some audio here. The brand-new general manager, Monsieur Jérôme Desbottins. For some of you that are aware, Eric Soler has been relieved of his duties, even though he has remained on the side as an advisor for Mr. Desbottins. And he sounded ready to go. He sounded fresh. He sounded like he was hoping to get a win against Chicago. Didn't happen, but still, though, here's the press conference that was with Mr. Desbottins And he sounds excited. He sounds ready to go, and he hopes he'll definitely turn the Red Bulls around, everything from the club players and into getting more butts into the seats. Monsieur Jérôme Desbottons.
Well, I'll say a few words, and I'll welcome international press. I recognize a few people from Europe, and obviously welcome the opportunity to get to know all of you. I tend to have an open-door policy in my office, and I hope that, you know, through Jürgen, Brian, and but occasionally directly, you know, we can all have some contacts. I'm clearly very happy to be here. This weekend is a big weekend for soccer games. More importantly, right now, it is halftime between Amherst College and Williams College. And as you know, Amherst is my alma mater, and clearly this is the game of the year for us. And then tomorrow is, as you also know, the Barcelona-Real Madrid game. So having the New York-Chicago game today for my, in a way, inauguration is pretty neat. As you know, I come from Chicago, where I've been the past 30 years, and during those past 30 years, I've been quite involved with U.S. soccer, be it at the youth level, be it as a player. In fact, I still play, so if you guys care about soccer, we can certainly talk. But I also coached for many years, and I was reffing games until a couple of years ago. In fact, after we're done, I'm going to greet the referees to let them know that they have in me someone who understands their misery and how difficult of a life they have. But clearly, from, you know, being a player, being a dad, and then going on to joining the board of the foundation and working with the technical committee of the federation, and then, as you know, spending time in Europe, I've been involved with the sport for a long, long time. I think I understand the U.S. soccer scene better than most, you know, and hopefully now that I am in a position of leadership within the MLS, that I can help the MLS grow, you know, and improve our game over time. Having said that, you know, please introduce yourself, and I look forward to answering your question.
Frank T.S. from the Star-Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're familiar with the American sports scene.
Yeah.
The college draft, even though this franchise never really put a lot of stock into it, has produced some good players. What is your opinion of the college draft, and are you familiar with college
play? I'm very familiar with the college draft, and I'm very familiar with the college scene. You know, I do believe that what we have in America is different than it is in Europe. We have a DNA that most Europeans don't understand. I think there's real value in our players going on to college, playing sports, getting an education. And in the end, they may mature, you know, at a slower pace than their European counterparts. But we have plenty of examples of players who've gone on to have great careers who did play in college. And therefore, I think the draft should be a real focus, a greater focus on our part in the years to come.
Michael Lewis from BigAppleSoccer.com.
Mm-hmm.
What do you consider your biggest priority, one, and two, how do you plan to grow attendance? Because that has to be a disappointing figure for the club and MLS as well.
It is, and I think I should exercise some humility in answering this question, because I'm sure that my predecessors had expectations that, you know, were in the end not met, and which have disappointed you, and all the fans, and potentially our shareholder as well. Well, I can tell you that our shareholder back home is fully committed to the sport, and it's fully committed to this team. The hiring of Gérard Houllier, which is something that, you know, in the U.S. press was not well covered, and maybe the Red Bull organization is at fault for not, you know, saying too much about, you know, who he is and where he comes from. But the decision of our shareholder to hire him and put him in charge of, you know, global soccer operation is a testimony to the commitment of the brand to the sport. Clearly, you know, Red Bull has five teams. You know, two clear priorities: the home team in Salzburg that plays in the first division of the Austrian Bundesliga, and obviously the New York Red Bulls, you know, which, you know, for which the objective, you know, has been, you know, clearly described to me as turning this franchise in the top, you know, soccer organization in North America. So attendance, you know, will be in many ways a priority, but I think, you know, for people to come and for people to enjoy the product, we have to work, you know, one, on making the day experience, you know, one that they remember. But more importantly, we have to make sure that we have a very competitive team, that we play a good game, and that we have results. The two, I think, go hand in hand.
Philip Bondi with the New York Daily News. I think the perception is that perhaps Anzufaki is now, something of a lame duck, and
mm-hmm.
I think that's the perception, unless you contradict it. And are you afraid that maybe going into the playoffs,
mm-hmm.
this is sort of a strange time, to undermine his authority.
The world of soccer worldwide is one that goes season by season. It's a little odd here because our season is not aligned to the seasons in Europe. But every great club with every great coach, you know, tend to wait till the end of the season to assess what will come next. Keep in mind what I just said, that Gérard Houllier was hired in the spring. Gérard came in with the responsibility of reorganizing all of the clubs of Red Bull. And clearly at this stage, the only decision he's really made has been in all of our clubs to split the GM and sports director responsibilities into two, you know, and therefore Gérard will at some point in the near future appoint a sports director for here in New York, and in due time that sports director will himself evaluate what direction to go for next year. Now, unequivocally today, we are behind Hans, and we're going to be with him, you know, through the end of the season. As to the next season, we don't know right now.
Franco Pizzo, MLSsoccer.com.
Yeah.
Obviously, a move of this nature doesn't happen overnight. I mean, how long ago did the talk start about you possibly taking this position? Was it week, long?
Well, it pretty short and pretty long. What you don't know is that my wife is Austrian, and that, in fact, she's from Salzburg, where I was married, where my daughter is living. And therefore, we've had over the year contacts with Mr. Mateschitz and his group. But at the same time, you know, it all happened after the hiring of Gérard. Gérard Houllier and I are all-time friends. I had tried to hire him as a head coach in Monaco. That didn't work out. And as he thought about what to do in New York, you know, he knew of my experience and the things I have done with the Federation, the Foundation, New Soccer, and so on. So he approached me at the end of July, really, and it took a month. Eventually, he brought me into Salzburg to meet with the head office and Mr. Mateschitz. And what really, I think, got me excited was the commitment that I talked about a few minutes ago, that clearly Red Bull wants to be in soccer the way they have demonstrated their abilities in Formula One. They want to be first, they want to win, and they're willing to commit the resources and the time.
Jerome, Alex Abbey from Go. What are your initial assessments of the roster so far, and, you know, what are your expectations for the season moving into the playoffs?
You know, I have an assessment, you know, and I think it's fantastic if you think that if I'm right, with 53 points today and 56 tonight, you know, we would have broken our record. You know, and the objective, as I look through what was written earlier in the season, was to have 55 points and to make the playoff. So we have a team that, you know, within the limitation of the MLS, with the salary cap, has done quite well. We might finish second in the division. We have the roster. We certainly have the commitment and the charisma on the part of the players to go all the way. So I'm optimistic that we might go all the way.
Jerome, with Monaco, there was a story on Sports Illustrated that, you know, you cut back on a lot of club spending.
I did.
Save some money.
I did. I had to.
Something that, you know, you're in charge of here, that's something that the club wants you to do, is cut back
on some certain areas. That's the very reason why I came here. I wasn't going to have to do what I did in Monaco. Monaco, I went there because they needed to save some money. Here, they asked me to come because they wanted to grow the business. And so, just the opposite.
Will you have a larger budget for next year to maybe promote the team? Because that seems to be been a problem here in the New York region.
Well, we have a larger budget in terms of, you know, the front office and the technical staff. And, you know, clearly we need to, I think, look at our, you know, the situation of our medical staff. We have to look at the nutrition of our players. I mean, everything that goes around running a professional club. We just have to do better. Salary cap is a salary cap. You know, 3 DPs, 3 DPs. So in terms of strengthening the team, you know, we should rely on Gérard Houllier's experience and success over the past 30 years, you know, to put the right team together with what the MLS allows us to do.
Mark Everson from New York Post. What is the duty split between the general manager and the sporting director?
It's fairly straightforward. You know, we have a sports director whose responsibility is going to worry about the head coach, you know, the academy, and player development. And, you know, everything else, such as making sure that you guys are well treated when you come here to the game, you know, my responsibility. But I think it's fairly standard in most professional clubs that you can't do it all. And in many ways, I'm quite relieved that I have to do it all.
You know, it took Eric Soler a good year to be familiar with all the issues of salary cap and DPs and the draft and everything. But he had some American assistant coaches around to help him out. Do you have that kind of support here to be familiar with?
Well, for one thing, keep in mind that, you know, I joined the foundation in 1998. You know, the foundation was the first lender to MLS. you know, and for many years we carried that loan, and therefore I'm quite familiar with the way the MLS was structured. None of us really agreed with everything, but I think we were for the most part supportive of what was put together. You know, also keep in mind that we have in Ricardo Campos probably, you know, a walking Bible in regards to the rules and regulation of the MLS. So I think, you know, regardless of who comes in and what happens, we're very much on top of our game regarding those rules and regulations.
Daniel Forsey, MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com. Have you spoken with the players, Thierry Henry and Sebastian Letou, about what you're going to be doing here as well?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, when I got off the plane on Wednesday, my first trip was to the training ground, and first had a very constructive talk with Hans Backe, and then I addressed the players and the technical staff for about 45 minutes. Then the next day took some time to talk to Rafa and talk to Thierry and talk to Tim, and I think all this is extremely constructive. I think they all have to, you know, recognize that it's a different planet. You know, when you look at U.S. soccer, you know, I use that expression, oh, it's a very different DNA than everything we know in Europe, and everybody needs some time to adjust to that. And 2 years is a short period of time for Thierry, and Tim just got off the plane in a way, and Rafa as well. But I think they're very committed. I think they have in them to win. You know, we have in them champions who have this with Thierry and Rafa won almost everything there is to win. So if you think of how prepared we are for this type of competition, we probably have the better team than any of our competitors.
Dan Dickinson, Gothamist. The press release mentioned that Eric Soler would be kept on as an internal consultant. Can you speak to what his role is going to be?
Yeah, because we're going to bring a sports director, and because I am in some fashion new to the Red Bull organization, we asked Eric if he was willing to stay with us for some time, and it's really his decision as to how long it will be. And he very graciously and very enthusiastically agreed to that. In fact, he and I had lunch yesterday and spent a couple of hours going over, you know, the important issue that I'm facing in my chair.
And that was the new general manager of the club, Jerome Debleton. It sounds like a nice gentleman. Of course, people were asking, because he was president of AS Monaco in French Ligue 1, would that be the same situation here as it was over there? I think it was a different situation. I think he's just going to concentrate on the club business outside of player personnel. It sounds like they're going to bring in a separate sporting director, though maybe Gerard Houllier will have a hands-on approach here from maybe he comes to Red Bull Arena more often, or he will just pick someone else to be the man running, obviously, transfers, trades, and pickups, youth academies going on and everything, and hopefully we'll see what's going to happen. Agreed that this is probably the wrong time to do something like this. I'd like to see them finish off the season well and make a strong playoff run. But, you know, these things happen in football and soccer, and, you know, it just happens. Do I agree with the move at the moment? I don't. I think it's the wrong time to make this type of move, and I think they should have allowed Eric Soler to finish off the season. If they, whether Backe wins the MLS Cup or not this year, remains to be seen, but apparently through some, the feeling is that it looks like this could be it for Hans Backe, and it's just not really that good. So that's the situation, obviously. But once again, for the New York Red Bulls, it's just one of those strange situations where, for, I guess for them, this is what they want to do. And it's just one of those things where I think it's just not the right thing for them, in my opinion, to make a move like that. But once again, you know, this is what happens at the boardroom level, whether you agree with it or not. This is how stuff like this works. And uh, and you just don't like I said, you're just not sure about why this happens, but it does. So we just move on now and just finish off with Hans Backe, and hopefully these things will get better for the Red Bulls as they finish off with two regular season games remaining. The final home match next Saturday against Sporting Kansas City, and then, of course, an afternoon tilt the Saturday after on the 27th. That will be down in Philadelphia at PPL Park in Chester, Pennsylvania, just outside of Philadelphia. The match, the loss comes at the wrong time. I will say that. The loss against Chicago comes at the wrong time. That was a – yeah, I have to give Chicago credit because Cheryl McDonald was able to find a way to stay onside, and Chicago took advantage of their chances where the Red Bulls did not. They had several chances in this match. I thought that they played well enough to at least get a goal or two, but unfortunately good on – look, you got to give Chicago credit. They played well. They bunkered in when they had to. Good defense from Arnie Friedrich. And in the second half, Chicago gets some advantage there on a break. Heath Pierce keeps MacDonald onside. And you can't fault Robles on both goals. Well-taken strikes by MacDonald. Once again, Chicago takes advantage, and they get their first win in three years at Red Bull Arena. So, and you got to give Chicago credit as well, because it doesn't matter who the head coach is, with the exception of Carlos De Los Cobos, who really wasn't that strong for Chicago, even though the Red Bulls did not win in Chicago a couple at Toyota Park. They still haven't won at Toyota Park. But once again, for the Red Bulls, they're – always get by Chicago, whether it's was at Giant Stadium, in Red Bull Arena, or in Toyota Park. They just do a fantastic job of pressure, of defending very well, helping their keeper. Sean Johnson really didn't have that much to be bothered with, to be honest with you. Even though that shot in the first half by Thierry Henry was going in, Arnie Friedrich just came out of nowhere and just punched the ball away, obviously with his foot. He just defended that ball well, gave up a corner, but once again, that was more Friedrich than it was Sean Johnson, so you have to give them credit for that. And give credit for the Red Bulls as well. They did not concede in the first 15 minutes of the match. They avoided that. Of course, there's some happiness about that one, but you got to say, pardon me, you just have to say that for the New York Red Bulls, they played a good match. It's just that Chicago played a little bit better, and they were able to do the job, and they were able to do it well. And right now, if you look at the standings, Chicago is in, second place right now. DC's in third. New York's in fourth. And New York right now is having they're still good enough to be in the playoffs. But it all depends on now, will they be in that wild card match and hosting it, or will they get out of it and finish in second? And we'll see what happens with Chicago. Don't forget, Chicago's coming off an embarrassing loss at home against the Philadelphia Union. Never thought you'd expect that to happen at all. But here we have right now Hans Backe, post-match press conference about the loss.
Here, Red Bulls head coach Hans Backe. Hans, your thoughts on the game today?
Yeah, I thought it looked good. We controlled the possession. We had our chances before they scored. I think we closed them down quite okay. But of course, caught one on the break. And we definitely didn't take our chances in the first 20-25 minutes in the second half.
Take questions, please. The microphone being passed around. Christian.
Coach, after going undefeated at home now twice in the last three games, you've lost by 2-0 margins. Is there an explanation for it? Seems like a lack of energy in both of those games, lack of movement.
Probably the wrong teams to lose against, Kansas and Chicago, definitely. But No, I don't think it's any lack of energy. I think we started a little bit slow with the first 10-15, but after the first 10-15, I had a good feeling that the control possession normally, and also created 2-3 really good chances before they score. So, I mean, it's small margins, and they took their chances.
Right. Hans, we're so used to teams in MLS spending money on attacking players. I was wondering what your thoughts on Friedrich were, and what you think a defender like Friedrich brings to MLS. We're not used to seeing that kind of experience in that class kind of in back.
Yeah, I think it suits him very well when a team sits. I think perhaps in a high-pressing team it's not the same, but when a team sits and he can play on in a way with his experience in a quite small area and things like that, then I think it works very well to organize the back four.
Michael, then Franco.
Yeah, Hans, two questions about two of your designated players. Was Henri hurt today? Because he just seemed to be out of kilter at times. And two, why did you bring Rafa in for Pierce?
For Thierry, no injuries on Thierry. Rafa in from the back four to join into midfield, so we could push Tim Cahill one step further up or higher up on the pitch. And also, of course, with his precise passing game, final passes when we were losing 1-0.
Franco to Jim.
Hans, both breakdowns on the goals were just passes behind the defense when Sergio McDonald was racing in on goal. Could you elaborate on what you saw on those two plays?
I normally need to see the replay to be 100% sure, but you feel in a way that it's a little bit too easy to run in behind with one final pass. It's it gets a little frustrating, annoying when you see that kind of goals. But normally, I would like to see the replays before I analyze it.
Go, Jim. Then over here.
Hans, how frustrating is it for you to see your team, you know, control possession like you did, get a lot of good scoring chances, and just shoot it wide, shoot it over the bar? You know, it seemed like you had many, many chances to be able to score and just not act at home. And how, from a coaching standpoint, how frustrating is that?
You know that teams always, whoever you play, will pick up some chances during a game. And I mean, when you don't take your chances, you know that they will get one or two 100% scoring chances whoever you play. But they were very effective, of course, McDonald were very effective to score on these two. But of course, it's very frustrating that that we don't score earlier in the second half.
Dan and Dave.
Coach, since Chicago's coming to the league in 1998, they've found a way to frustrate this club to know it. What have you seen from Chicago that has frustrated you, either here or at Toyota Park?
I think mostly when we play them during these 3 years, it's been even games. I think they won perhaps quite big in Chicago one game. But otherwise, it's been even games, tight 1-0, 1-1. And that type of scoring. So, I mean, it's a solid team. It's well organized. They defend very well. They have players for breaks, pacey, wing players, right players they can use. And, of course, McDonald was very good as a target today to hold up the play.
Dave.
Coach, Lloyd Sam, he brought a certain dynamic and a different kind of pace to your team. In that one game, it seemed to make a big difference. Is that what's missing for this team?
I think it's very important that you have a wide player who can take them on 1v1, someone who can create something 1v1. Because we said at halftime, I mean, both our wide players just need to go forward now. It can't be back passes, side passes. You just need to take them on 1v1 to create something. And Lloyd did it in the first game.
Take one more up top. Right here, Franco.
Two games left in the season, you guys are now in fourth place, though a bit of a ways from sharing yourself a playoff spot. I mean, what's the mentality going into this international break before the next game against Sporting Kansas City?
I mean, you never know. Three, four guys are going for the international games. We will have some days off in the beginning of this week, but we will also get players in already on Tuesday, Wednesday for some individual training, treatment, and the full roster will start training Friday, but most of the guys will be in already on Tuesday. So, I mean, it's a lot of time to train now, prepare ourselves for the Kansas game, and the last game against Philly, and we just need to come back. I mean, that's only one way, and that's to build ourselves up for the Kansas game and win that game.
Thank you.
And that's Hans Bakke giving his post-match press conference. I asked him, what makes this Chicago Fire team always tough to play against. And, very good assessment right there. And once again, it's really tough to, how Chicago always comes and plays against the Red Bulls, whether it be here at Red Bull Arena or over at Toyota Park. But I remember those Chicago Fire teams. Always tough to play against. Always tough to play against. Doesn't matter who the coach was, except for Carlos de los Cobos just didn't do the job for Chicago back in the day for those last year and a half. Last 2 years, obviously, the year and a half. But once again, Chicago's always been a tough side to face against for the New York Red Bulls. Moving on, Thierry Henry, of course, after getting some treatment from trainer. So, on this table, and he talked to everyone after the match.
57 minutes before you guys got a shot on, the first shot on goal. How frustrating, and what were they doing to frustrate you?
They were organized. I mean, we had the same type of game, I guess, against Kansas City. The only thing is they didn't score early, but we got what we deserve. They're a better team. More organized. They wanted it more. Having said that, we're still not out, and it's going to be a fight. I think tomorrow Kansas City play against Columbus, and you still have DC Kansas City or DC Columbus. In fact, I don't actually remember well. So obviously, some team's going to drop some points. But, at the end of the day, the team on top at the moment in the East deserves to be on top. We can be sitting here talking about we should have done this, we should have done that. They deserve to be where they are. They play better than us. They wanted it more. So hopefully, maybe if we go to the playoff, we're going to meet them again. But we're going to have to see. Now, obviously, it looks like it's going to be way more difficult for us because I think everybody is trying to avoid if you go to the playoff contestability. But that's the way it is. We're going to have another go at them soon. So we can see where we are. But it's a tough one. But sometimes you got to recognize that the team is better than you, and they were better than us today. And overall, they had a good run recently, and it's not a mistake that they are where they are right now. They're doing extremely well.
What is it about Chicago that made them so tough for you today?
Same thing. Well organized. I said to you, they don't give us a lot of opportunities like Kansas City did. And like I said to you, and like I've been saying, they don't recently, they apart the other night when they play against Kansas City, they don't concede a lot of goals and Kansas City either. So usually the team that don't concede are quite often at the end of the season at the top of the league. So like I said to you, they're working hard as a team, and they deserve to be where they are, both of them.
Do you feel... Go ahead, Mike.
You've lost two nothing games at home to two top flight teams. You are concerned that the team cannot get over the hump and beat some quality teams at this juncture of the season?
Well, we only won against LA, I think, this year. And that was away from home, when LA had their bad time. Other than that, we drew against Seattle, we drew against San Jose, we won against Houston, if you can say, but they hammered us at their place. Go back Kansas City, we still didn't beat Kansas City. We won against Chicago here, we all know how. They killed us at their place, 3-1. As I said to you, I'm still hoping. I'm still working. We're still working on getting into the playoff and hoping that things are going to get better. But as I said, you can see it. If we go on playing the same way right now, like I said, I think it wasn't fair on Thursday. I don't know if you guys remember. I said Chicago right now, Kansas City, and a lot of teams are kind of ahead of us. Having said that, we still have two games to break the side up and get better into the playoffs. Hopefully it can happen. But as I said to you, I'm not giving up. I'm just saying right now, you got to give credit to Chicago and Kansas City and the other team on the West, but we're going to fight till the end.
I was gonna say, did you feel good coming off the field at the halftime? Because it was still 0-0. Did you feel like...
Yeah, but we were not having our usual flow that we have at home, mm-hmm. right? So you kind of happy because we didn't concede early. Mm-hmm. but as I said, it kind of looked like if a team was going to score, it was going to be Chicago. And it did happen. And then, therefore, after that, it was kind of more difficult for us. And then you take they take a player out of the caliber of Ñarko, and you put Oduron. You know you're gonna have to run after them. Having said that, McDonald had a great game. Rolf in the middle, clever player on the ball. And Pose and Pallodini. I mean they have a good squad. Friedrich at the back. First time I played against him, I used to play against him before back in the days of his play in Europe. But as I said to you, you know, I'm not going to sit here and and give a lot of compliment to Chicago, but they deserve it. And you know, we didn't lose against a lot of teams this year at home, and the two teams that we lost against are above us, so they deserve to be what they are right now.
Earlier in the year, you pointed out how, you know, you had key guys stepping up, or just guys just stepping up at, you know, certain games, different guys, and now this towards this late run, it hasn't really been. Those guys stepping up has pretty much been you and Kenny Cooper, and I mean, that's pretty much it.
Well, I mean, it is a team effort, you know. You got, we're on 53 points right now, and we got those 53 points because Connor Lade was exceptional. Because Brendan Barkett was exceptional, because Dax, and I'm not going to sorry, and obviously people kind of remember always the last few games, but you can be in that position because your team was performing at one point. If not, you don't get 53 points just like that. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You know, sometimes you do deliver, sometimes you don't, and it is what it is. But as I said to you, Chicago was a better team today, but to go back to what you said, they did deliver somehow, somewhere during the season. And yeah, we didn't score today, we didn't score against Kansas City, but it does happen. We need to come back, fight, and see what we can do if we go into the playoffs.
After a loss like this, is it good to have this, I guess, extended break to be able to work?
No, I don't like.
You guys just want
I don't
to
like.
Get back in there.
Yeah, I would love to have a game in 3 days. To erase that, obviously you cannot do that, but we're going to have to prepare ourselves well, because we all know that Kansas City didn't concede a lot of goals, and they're the best team on the East, so it's going to be a difficult game. They showed us already what they can do, but we're going to have a go. I mean, that's the only thing we can do, and we all know also that's going to be a tough game away from home against Philly at the end of the season.
At halftime, you had some words with the referees, and I would assume that came because of the non-call.
Well, I just told him that I got a yellow card for that. That was all he said to me. That was a better tackle than mine. So that's the way it is.
And that's Thierry Henry. Of course, he was booked in the match, and for a tackle from behind, well, I thought it was deserved. You know, you don't want to say things like that, but it was true. It was a tackle from behind, and he got him, didn't get the ball, and he got booked for it, so there's nothing much you can do about it. But obviously Thierry Henry saw everything he needed to see, and once again, give credit to the Chicago Fire. They played a very good match, and they deserved the win. Let's go over to Dax McCarty right now, who, of course, he felt disappointed, but he felt there were certain things that had to be done that were done that were good, and then some things that were not good. So here's Dax McCarty right now.
One tough result to take. Thought it was a pretty even game. Not very many clear-cut chances on either side. The first goal was always going to win the game, I think. Fortunately, that wasn't us. That was them. Turnover, I think it's a turnover in the midfield, and you know, one quick pass, and I think we're all bent out of shape in the back. And it's a good finish. Give McDonald credit. It's a good finish. It's clinical. You know, it was tough for us to break them down. They were pretty solid defensively, and they sat back. They let us have most of the game in possession, but that doesn't mean anything. So it's a tough one to take. Got a little bit of work to do now, so we'll bounce back, hopefully. Have a week off, and then prepare for Kansas City.
Seemed like a lack of energy up there a little bit from you guys, especially the opening 15, 20 minutes, and just kind of seemed disjointed throughout the whole game.
Yeah, I mean, I think both teams were a little bit disjointed throughout, you know, certain parts of the game. But, you know, for us, we try to start games better. Maybe we were a little disjointed to start the game, but we didn't concede. So that was a positive. Didn't concede a goal in the first half. Probably had the better of the chances. I think they had maybe one header, went over the goal. But I don't think we were too troubled defensively. you know, unfortunately, we didn't get that first goal, like I said, and that's when you're playing against a good team like Chicago, if you score the first goal, I think that really forces them out of their shell a little bit, forces them to take more risks. But today, we had to be the ones taking the risks in the last 15, 20 minutes. You know, they scored a good goal and just kind of opened us up. And we can't allow these defensive breakdowns every game. It's just got to be tighter from everybody, from the forwards to the midfield all the way through the back.
Dad, you talked about not giving up an early goal today, but no goals a week after scoring four.
Mm-hmm.
Is that lack of consistency? One week, you know, defensively, problems offensively, then this week, is that lack of consistency worrisome at this point of the season?
No, not really. I think they defended well as a team. I think we still got our chances. I think they were pretty courageous, actually, in their defending game. They had quite a few blocks, I think, on a couple shots that we had, a couple deflections. So the chances are there. I think we were a little bit more out of sync offensively than we were against Toronto. But I think the focus for the first 55, 60 minutes defensively was pretty good. Like I said, I don't think they created many chances. I have to watch the game again, but from my vantage point, they tried to sit back and hit us on the counter with their speed, so I thought we dealt with it pretty well. Unfortunately, we weren't clinical today. I think on another day, maybe we get a lucky bounce or you know, the chance I have goes in, and then it's a totally different game. So it's one of those games. You take it on the chin, and you go look at the tape, and you see where we can get better, because obviously we can get better. Still a work in progress, and there's only two games left in the season, and you know, we have some work to do to get into the playoffs, and these last two games are going to be very important. But I think we're used to these games under pressure. We have one game at home, one game on the road, so it's it's just got to be a little bit better from all of us.
In fact, the shot you hit,
mm-hmm.
I saw your reaction. You thought you got it. Did you just see that it tailed a little bit at the end?
Yeah, I hit it clean. I hit it really clean. I've been trying to work on shooting the ball a little bit more. It's not something that I think to do all the time. I'm always thinking to pass first and kind of shoot later. So I had the chance. I had another one that I hit with my right foot that kind of wasn't a very good shot, but went across the goal and gave us a little bit of a chance. So when that one came out, I just hit it first time, and it looked good. Thought it was going to find the bottom corner, but unfortunately that's the sometimes the way the ball bounces. And, you know, maybe if the wind is blowing a little differently, that finds the bottom corner. But yeah, these are the chances that we have in the throughout the game that, you know, maybe on a different day go in. But today wasn't our day. Give credit to Chicago. They played a very good game. You know, they sat in and they didn't allow us many chances. Usually they, you know, we pull them out here and there for, you know, a very clear-cut chance or two. But they defended very well. I think that was probably one of their points of emphasis coming into the game, was to defend better. So they did a good job. You got to give them credit. And like I said, the first goal was always going to win the game. The
team is in fourth place now. So what is your mentality going into the break? And what do you have to do, obviously, besides winning the final two matches of the year?
Yeah, the mentality is to stay focused, not get too low. I mean, these types of games happen in MLS. A team comes in and has a good day. You know, and I think they would have probably been happy getting out here with a 0-0 draw, but they, you know, they scored a goal late, and you know, they sat back and made us take the game to them. And I think we had a little bit of a lack of energy to try to get back in the game for whatever reason, which, you know, we obviously have to fix. But no, we can't panic. I mean, we're still in the hunt. We're still in the playoff, you know, in the playoff spot, and you know, we have our own destiny in our own hands. So we have to win these last two games for sure. It's not going to be easy. You know, how we go about our business in these next couple of weeks will be very important. We just have to have good training sessions, and we have to prepare accordingly for Kansas City. They gave us our first loss at home. It's never an easy one to take, but they're a good team for sure. But we have to stay confident. We have to know that we're a good team, and you know, we have to learn from what we did wrong tonight.
What happened with the front office earlier this week? Is that a distraction at all?
Not at all. That's part of business. That's part of what we sign up for when we have this job, and it's not something that the players let affect them. I didn't see any change. I thought the attitude was good in training. You know, everyone had the same mentality. It's just a game where, you know, you don't play your best, and things weren't clicking. So you watch the video, you try to learn from it, and you move on. It's a obviously tough to go into a week break, an international break, coming off a loss. But look, the East is close. You know, one win you know, puts us right back in you know, the hunt for second place. And like I said before, it's in our hands. So nothing is ever easy in this league, and we're going to have to make sure that we're ready to play on the Saturday we play Kansas City.
That's Dax McCarty on the match. And, of course, don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, this coming Friday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern, 3:30 p.m. Pacific, USA at Antigua and Barbuda, World Cup qualifying pre- and post-game show. Pre-game at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, once again, 3:30 p.m. Pacific. Post-game, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, as the USA are down in Antigua and Barbuda, as they will try and defeat Antigua and score as many goals as possible. And if you cannot watch at home, if you don't have Dish Network or DirecTV, with BN Sport, head on over to your local bar, your Hooters, your pub, wherever you want to go. Watch it there. And please listen in, blogtalkradio.com/Forestine's Fire. Moving on now, of course, with this match, Luis Robles was in goal again for Bill Gaudette. And... not his fault on how he played played those goals. Just McDonald got into a better position, was able to put him in. So here's Luis Robles on how he played for the Red Bulls on that match.
Let's talk about what happened with McDonald. Apparently it looked like he just took advantage of a counter and just put two in.
Yeah, well, I think looking back on both goals, we had a breakdown in our back four, and those are the type of goals that we need to avoid if we really want to make a deep run into the playoffs. I'd have to look at the replay, and the first one looked like a tough call. Maybe it was offsides, but he did well. He finished well. And then the second one, I mean, that can't happen. It's just the way it is.
This is a Chicago team that's always given New York tough matches, like, it doesn't matter what year it is. What have you seen from Chicago, even though it's only been a short time, but what have you seen from Chicago that makes them look so tough against New York?
They're a solid team, no doubt about that. They didn't make any mistakes in the back today, and they get forward fast. They get numbers up quick, and to their credit, they put pressure on us, and they nick two goals there, so they're a solid team.
From your angle, I'm sorry, did you say that you thought the first play was offside?
Yeah, I mean, of course it goes by really fast, but when a guy's that wide open behind the line, you always have to check. But it still doesn't matter. You know, it's, I think, a communication thing that happened there. Two guys went for the same ball, and we just have to be better about that because we can't be giving up goals like that this late in the season.
Is it positive that the international break is coming for the last two games of the season?
Well, I think after a game like that, you probably want to get back on the field right away, right your wrongs, and these guys, they got to go and make some long trips, you know, some international trips, and regardless of what happens, they take care of their business abroad, and when they come back, we have to have a good training week because we have a big game against Kansas City, and it's so tight right now in the playoff race for the East that we have to make sure that we take care of our business.
Luis Robles, of course, talking about that match, and I absolutely agree with him. They're gonna have to get out of the international break, but they're gonna have to do a lot better at what was going on in the match. Moving on, of course, Brandon Barklage, second match back back in that right back, and here is his opinion.
Okay. We're all extremely disappointed right now. I've never felt so down after a game in my career, I think. We just didn't have the right mentality going into the second half, and we paid for it.
Is there added pressure with the playoffs and everything coming on? Is this something you guys are trying to push out of the...
Yeah, absolutely. You want to take advantage of these games at home, and we didn't do that today. Chicago came out. We knew they were a counterattacking team. And they took advantage of it, two breaks and two goals. So, I mean, credit to them, but we got to come out harder.
It's got a week off now in between games. Is this a good opportunity to kind of reset the counter and come out strong on those last two?
Yeah, I think we need to set our mentality right, you know, going into the next game against KC at home. We got to take advantage of this next home game, get a result, and, you know, hopefully push into the playoffs.
Brandon, what happened with the first goal that McDonald scored? Did you feel it was onside, offside?
or
I couldn't tell you, to be honest. From my view, it looked like he was offside. I got to see the replay, but you know, it was just another counterattack, and they got a lot of speed going forward. So, you know, there's a little breakdown in the back four, and he put it away.
What makes Chicago such a difficult team to face, especially against this side, that they've had pretty much good play against New York throughout the history?
They have a solid back four. They shut things down in the back, and then they go forward quick.
Is it worrisome at this point of the season, given the, I guess, inconsistent performance? You guys, you know, one game you guys are scoring four goals, one game you guys are not getting many chances, not creating many chances.
Yeah.
Is that worrisome?
Definitely worrisome. The only positive that I can take out of this game is that we didn't concede an early goal. But, you know, we didn't respond like a championship caliber team does, and we paid for it.
Brandon Barklage, you can tell how upset he felt and he sounded, and you know, I don't blame him, you know, obviously. I mean, he did a great job down the right side on the back line. It was really just taking advantage of Heath Pierce, because Heath Pierce kept Cheryl McDonald onside on both counters, from my vantage point, from the press box. And it's just one of those things where you just can't, you just got to try. You can't blame yourself. I mean, obviously you needed the 3 points, and that was that type of a game where, you know, New York could not put themselves in a bad position. Honestly, it was a good game. I thought it was a solid game. This was a nationally televised game on NBC, the first MLS game on NBC in this contract. Of course, the last time was, I believe, 1999, I think it was, or 90, that would be MLS was on national television when ESPN and at the time ABC was separate to ESPN, or as they probably say it back then. But once again, both games were on, and this game was on NBC. A great job by NBC to broadcast the game once again with Arlo White, Kyle Martino, and Russ Baller doing another fantastic job running the show for NBC Sports Network and NBC Sports right away. And you know what? You just got to say, once again, NBC has done a fantastic job covering Major League Soccer in their first year, not only just bringing in Arlo White and Kyle Martino, but of course with JP Della Camera and John Strong over in Portland and many other people that are, you know, in the business, Brian Dunseth as well, to doing color commentary for NBC Sports Network. It's a fantastic job all the way around by NBC for covering Major League Soccer. And obviously they got two more years left on this current contract, obviously with next year and 2014 and after the World Cup. We'll see where this takes us. I think NBC Sports Network and NBC Sports as a whole, they have done a fantastic job with covering the league. And of course, you cannot go wrong with the talent that they've brought in. And you would like to see, at the time, of course, when ESPN showed games on both ESPN and ESPN2, they had ESPN at the afternoon, they had ESPN2 in the evening, they dominated MLS play. It was fantastic. I would like to see NBC Network actually pull something like this. And at the same time, the flex scheduling that they have with the National Hockey League and with the National Football League for certain games to have on NBC and take it away from the regional channels to let everyone see what they're doing. You know what? I say let's have the flex schedule involved in MLS. This year it's an opening contract. It looks good right now through how many games they've broadcasted both on NBC Sports Network and now on NBC. They're going to have one more day. Of course, that'll be the end of October, another game on NBC, as the New York Red Bulls travel down to Philadelphia to finish off the regular season. But once again, I enjoy the coverage NBC gives. I think they do a fantastic job. And once again, they try to tell a story. I think NBC Sports, this is why I feel NBC Sports does a much better job at covering games than the other networks. I think they do a much better job, and they use every single camera angle they can get. And also, isn't it interesting how you have the color commentator on the field while the play-by-play man is up in the booth? I think that's a fantastic job, and of course they are using that when they do the NHL games. Obviously, Mike Emmerich in the booth with Eddie Olczyk, and you have Pierre McGuire in between the benches. I think down the ice he has a better angle at things because you don't mind the one high and the one low. So I think that's a fantastic thing, and I don't mind it, to be honest with you. Moving on, of course, as we're going to finish up here with the audio, of course, there's Connor Lade, who came on as a second-half sub to bring some energy, taking off Wilmon Conde, and here's his opinion right now.
As long as 2-0, I mean, what's the feeling right now? How tough is this loss?
It's pretty crappy. You know, we had a big opportunity here to take, clinch playoff berth, but, you know, we came out and just, you know, didn't get what we were looking for, and, you know, we're pretty disappointed.
You came on at halftime. What were coach's instructions to you? From what we heard, Wilmon wasn't hurt, so...
He just wanted me to come on, you know, throw out some energy, you know, try to get up and down the flank and, you know, just be solid back there. You know, I'm pretty disappointed in my play. It's not really an excuse. It's just got to be better next time.
How much, you know, there was a big shakeup in the team earlier this week. You're a young guy, you know, you're still getting used to how things work at the pro level. I mean, how much of a distraction was that to you guys or to yourself throughout the week?
You know, I think as a player, you know, you can't focus on those things and, you know, use that as anything more than, you know, just it's a change. And, you know, you got to adapt to whatever's thrown at you during the season. There's a lot of ups and downs, but you can't, you know, let anything affect you on the field. And, you know, it's not an excuse for the way we played tonight or the result we got. It was, you know, it's just a change for us.
You've already played like 3 games against Chicago. What did they do differently this time, or was it basically just the same old Chicago Fire that just comes at you?
You know, they're a good team. They keep the ball well. They've got a lot of athletic guys, and, you know, they'll punish you if they get on the break. It's, you know, we knew what to expect going into it. We just, you know, didn't get what we wanted to get out of the game, and we didn't really ever find our way into the game. It was kind of just choppy the whole game, you know, sporadic little, you know, pieces. We put a little thing together, and then we'd get counted on, and, you know, we just couldn't really find our rhythm out there, and, you know, it was disappointing.
Were the goals you guys conceded today too easy? Because it seemed like they just threw balls, and then Sheridan Gunn just raced in, and he's in on goal.
Yeah.
Were they too easy?
Yeah. You know, it's, you know, it's part of the game. You got to be tighter in the back. And, I mean, you know, they kind of spoke for themselves.
You had this long...
And that is Connor Lade on what's been going on here and with the loss. I just want to pass along some news, of course, about Michael Jones, ladies and gentlemen. Apparently, the man who killed Mr. Jones has fled to Mexico. This is from courtesy of the Washington Post, as they get the news story today from the Associated Press. A man suspected of slashing 25-year-old youth soccer coach to death and slicing off his ear last week on a New York City street, fled to Mexico City on Tuesday, a law enforcement official said. His name is Orlando Orea, capital letter O, lowercase r as in Ram, E as in extra, A as in about, also known as Orlando Gutierrez or Orlando Estevas, bought a one-way ticket on an Aeromexico flight with cash moments before it was scheduled to leave from Kennedy International Airport on Tuesday morning, according to the official who spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity because the investigation was ongoing. Detectives discovered Orea's name at about 4:45 p.m. Tuesday and immediately placed him on a no-fly list, but he was already gone. The official said Orea, who is 32, is suspected of killing Michael Jones at about 4:30 a.m. Sunday morning, after the two men were seen arguing on 14th Street in Union Square, one of Manhattan's busiest neighborhoods. So we now know the name of the person who attacked and killed Michael Jones, but unfortunately the police were not quick enough to detain him. He already left this past Tuesday morning to fly down to Mexico. If there's anyone from Mexico who listens to this show, because of obviously of Rafa Marquez being on the New York Red Bulls. And if you do come from Mexico City, I implore you, if you can help us out and find this man. Obviously, there's no picture of this gentleman in the Washington in this story from the Washington Post, but I'm imploring my good friends in Mexico who listen to this program, who listen to my CONCACAF Champions League show, because obviously John Jagu does join me for this for these shows, whether we talk about anything with Mexico or with clubs from Mexico as well. Please, I implore you, my friends down in Mexico City, please find this man. Inform the police, the policía, and try and get the government, if possible, to extradite this person back to the United States, back to New York City. And please, for basically, you know, for football, please bring him back so he can face justice, so that the family and the girlfriend and the friends can feel, they can feel at ease and not worry anymore about, will this person face justice? Please help us out here. And if you can find him, contact the Mexican government, contact your government to have him extradited back to the United States, because this piece of garbage does not deserve to be in any sanctuary in the country of Mexico. Just remember, don't let it happen to a good person that you know down there. Help us, please. Help us bring this man back to the United States. And please talk to the policía and your government to bring this piece of garbage back to New York City. Help us, please, because this is not what should happen. And I thank you to my brothers in football down in Mexico. Thank you. Please help us bring this bastard back so that we can give him justice. Personally, and I really don't condone violence, I try not to, but I'll be honest, I hope he'll get the same treatment like he gave Mr. Michael Jones, because that piece of garbage deserves the same fate that he gave to Mr. Michael Jones. And that is the truth. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, as we're finishing up here on the 40 Cents Fire Internet Soccer Show, don't forget World Cup qualifying coverage. Earl Reed and myself, hopefully we'll have another panelist for the pre- and post-game shows, as we're going to watch the USA take on Antigua down in the Caribbean. Once again, the match will be broadcasted on BN Sport. If you do not have DirecTV or Dish Network, head on over to your local bar, your pub, your Hooters, wherever you go to watch the games, even the Buffalo Wild Wings if it's possible, hopefully. Go ahead, watch the match. 40 Cents Fire Internet Soccer Show this coming Friday, 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific for pregame, 30 minutes. The match will start at 7 o'clock. Postgame, 9 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. To listen to post-game action, I will be broadcasting live from the Football Factory in Legends in New York City on West 33rd Street. Come on over, have some fun, and you know what? Visiting me in New York City, that's fine too. Come on over to Legends, and we'll have a drink, and we'll have something to eat. We'll have some fun. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank my guests. I want to thank Dwayne Rollins from the 24th Minute Blog, as well as a member of the Canadian Soccer News Group. I also want to thank Michael Lewis of BigAppleSoccer.com, TroppyGoal.com, as well as New York Newsday. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to this program. Quickly, this month, October the 2nd, I have over 760 listens on October 2nd. That is now officially the highest rated show altogether on the Feuerstein's Fire shows. 891 is the highest rated. 760 for all Feuerstein's Fire regular shows. My name's Daniel Feuerstein, and as always, please enjoy your football. Have a good night, everybody.